We're exploring the Internet of Things, or IoT, this hour of the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Countless devices in our world are connected to the Internet. They're collecting and sharing data at this moment. And thanks to wireless networks and super cheap computer chips, there's a vast array of everyday objects that can come with an added level of digital intelligence. Here's the short list. Thermostats, light switches, doorbells, wearable health monitors, like the one that's on my wrist that will give me a zap in about an hour because I don't take steps during the show. So what do you think about all these electronic devices being connected to our activities? Do you appreciate the convenience of devices like smartwatches and things that can operate with an app on your phone? What concerns do you have about the data flowing into these devices? We're at 800-642-1234. Sala Sander is project coordinator for the Wisconsin Internet of Things Council. Sala, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
And Jeremy Udovich is here, Regional Sales Director of Internet of Things and Manufacturing at HiCo Solutions and Board Chair of the Wisconsin Internet of Things Council. Jeremy, welcome to you.
Thank you. Good morning.
Well, let's keep going with the short list of all these devices and things that are connected to the Internet. It seems like more and more each day devices get smarter and there's a chip implanted and something else, hopefully not my cornflakes. Can you, Jeremy, give us some of your go-to things that you think of in the Internet of Things?
Yeah, absolutely. So many of them are going to be consumer-based, right? That's what we're probably most familiar with. And these lie in like smart televisions, smart speakers like Amazon Alexa, for example, wearables like the popular Fitbit tracking system. But then there's a whole nother version of smart products coming out, like in our kitchens. We're going to have smart appliances like refrigerators with screens that can show you your calendar, for example, for the day, and also give you remote access to video stream live of what is actually sitting inside of your refrigerator. So if you're out shopping, for example, you can put something on your list. Other items would be like smart connected window shades. You know, imagine walking into your home and it recognizes that the sun is coming out of the east and all of your east windows go down because it knows you're in there now. Another really cool one would be the garage door openers that Chamberlain manufactures. You leave for work for the day, you're going to get an alert if you left that garage door open. I think that one's really pretty cool.
Yeah. Mm. I could use that and the oven. Sala, how about you? What's on your short list?
Well, my family of four, we pretty much use the Alexa. You know, you have teenagers who don't answer to you when you call, so you just use the Alexa and make an announcement. The beauty of that is I have a kid in college in Illinois, and she actually message us and says, would you guys stop making announcements? I can hear it all the way down here, and I'm studying.
That's amazing.
That's pretty much the big thing for us, you know, is the Alexa. And, of course, with four kids, everyone is connected. My family, we are, everyone is working and moving. And so that's become our everyday life. I mean, I don't have any smart oven yet. I'm still teaching my children the old school way so they know how to cook, how to turn things on and turn things off.
Well, it certainly is tempting as a consumer to want to upgrade to something that's from, you know, low tech to high tech. Jeremy, on the business side, how are companies approaching these devices and changing their products?
Yeah, so not only even changing their products, in some cases, they're changing their entire business models, right? But in today's world, you can't no longer just focus on, you know, manufacturing of a good, right? From a pure Wisconsin Rust Belt sense. Like, we actually have to look at it as evolving into a tech company. We're putting electronics in items that never had electronics before in a lot of cases. Mm-hmm. We're connecting these to the internet. We're asking our products to actually communicate without our intervention with other devices. There's a whole new type of talent, for example, that enters into the company sphere that they just never really had before. There's a great company in Milwaukee called Badger Meter that are connecting water valves. So the days of flood loss, for example, should be a thing of the past, because we have multiple valves that all talk to each other and can identify, hey, there's an abnormal amount of water flow here. It can talk to another device and say, hey, can you validate this? And as soon as they get a validation, and of course this happens in milliseconds, they can throw an alert or close a valve and shut things down and actually ask a human to intervene. So this is an entire, and this all takes software. So these traditional
And this is happening at the municipality level?
So both inside industrial business,
okay,
or buildings, and also from the like smart metering on many of our homes, for example.
Yeah, we're talking with Jeremy Yudovich, who is the board chairperson for the Wisconsin Internet of Things Council. Sala Sander here as well, project coordinator for the council. We're talking about all the connected devices, wireless networks, how our world is becoming more interconnected by the day. You can join in. What are your thoughts on so-called Internet of Things devices? Do you know what they are? Do you own a Fitbit, for example, or a Roomba? How about a home thermostat that you can control with an app? Join in at 800-642-1234. Sala, I wonder, the council was created by Sheboygan Economic Developers. What does proximity to Kohler and watching Kohler's influence on innovations and fixtures, what influence does that have on the council?
Oh, important, very big. I think one of the reasons the council was created was because of the big players that we have right here. And we feel very blessed and lucky in Sheboygan to have Kohler, Milwaukee Tools, to name a few, the Bemis. And so we're surrounded by all of these manufacturers. And, of course, they are moving along in their research and development. And so one of the reasons we started, the council was started, was to bring in the big, to have a conversation, really. You have your big companies that are moving right along, but we didn't want the heart of manufacturing in Wisconsin to be left behind. Just like Jeremy had mentioned earlier, it's not just changing what you are creating, it's changing your whole business plan, how you do it. And so we wanted to be able to have an exchange of ideas. Really talking to each other about what's new, because we all know technology moves fast, and you don't want to be left behind. That's kind of one of the things we are asking our members is, come on in, learn. How do we move forward together? And so, yes, absolutely. And Kohler being on our board is tremendous for us because, it's leverage and they are pretty much showing, this is important work. And so we are in the council because we think it's important. And so for us, we want to tell other companies, come join us, especially here in Wisconsin. Let's move forward together.
We're exploring Internet of Things, what it means for our lives. We have two experts, and they're Sala Sander, who is the council's project coordinator. Jeremy Yudovich is the Wisconsin Internet of Things Advisory Board Chair. Where do you think we're headed with the pervasiveness of Wi-Fi devices, tablets, smartphones? Are we too connected, or do you crave more connection? Do you think we'll soon live in a future where all our electronic devices talk to each other? 800-642-1234. Back in a moment on the Ideas Network. You're with us for the morning show as we explore the Internet of Things. In 2011, Cisco published a white paper forecasting that by this year, more than 50 billion devices would be connected to the Internet. But this statistic, Cisco clarified in 2013, is dependent on linking up tires, roads, cars, supermarket shelves, even cattle by 2020. We're not there yet. So what's holding up connectivity? Why aren't all devices smart or chipped? Join in 800-642-1234. We have Sala Sander, who is the Wisconsin Internet of Things Council Project Coordinator. Jeremy Udovich is the group's board chairman and regional sales director of Internet of Things and Manufacturing at HiCo Solutions, and they stay with us. Let's take a call now. Michael is joining us from Kakana. Hi, Michael.
Hey, good morning. I'm a person who has been involved in the Internet of Things before it had that name. We've been tying buildings together with power monitoring, lighting control, HVAC, security, and I'm just a private individual who's worked for many companies that have done this, and we get to the point where a building is almost alive, where you're looking at the lighting controls and controlling the HVAC, double-checking security, using the utility monitoring to decide whether or not to turn loads off and on or control the sources of things. It's a very, very powerful thing. It can save companies money, and it's just an intriguing thing that has been around longer than people realize.
Michael, thanks. Jeremy, the building is almost alive when you start adding up all of the connectivity.
It's true. It's true. That's a great way of saying it. And you're right. IoT has been around far longer than the terminology. I think the term was coined in 1999, but certainly through what was called M2M or machine to machine way back when. This has been around for several additional decades.
When Michael talks about the savings that consumers and businesses can experience, what are some of those savings that we can see when you have devices and certainly things that are connected to running powerful machines or lighting? How much savings do you see there, Jeremy?
Well, it depends on each each use case. What one of my favorite is always about like supply chain, where vehicles are required to hit the road. There's wear and tear, there's fuel. Imagine that we have real insight from a service perspective. Like maybe I deliver propane, for example. There's a great company I met out at MIT about 4 or 5 years ago called Tank Utility. They put a cellular module on rural propane tanks, number one, so that rural John that lived out there didn't have to shovel out to check his gauge every winter. What this actually enabled the distribution companies to do is get real-time insight into how much fuel was in all of their customers' tanks. So they only had to put trucks on the road when it was required. You know, weather was coming and they knew people were below half full, for example. So they could roll their trucks only when they needed to, saving on fuel costs, wear and tear, labor. Mm-hmm. There are countless examples of this out there. Now that people are getting real-time insight into what their products are doing out in the field.
Sala, you were mentioning earlier about how bigger companies like Kohler are helping the smaller manufacturers a little bit more, almost in maybe a mentor way. Is that going too far, or do you see some mentorship happening here with smaller companies?
Well, yeah, absolutely. I think one of the things big companies are trying to do, they're trying to leverage IoT, right? Just beyond the customer-facing products. And so one of the ways they can do that is, you know, making purchasing decisions so that they are buying the machines, like what Jeremy said, you know, that could be useful for them. But also, I think one of the issues that's going to come up and that people are always thinking about is privacy. But, you know, at company level, imagine if you were servicing a company, but you need to know, just like Jeremy said, you need to have your eyes and ears inside the company so that you can monitor the machine so that you know, just like you said, when is it wear and tear going to happen so that it's being fixed before it breaks down, right? And often, you know, people are saying, wait, that's spying on me. But is it? or is it gathering the information to make efficient production? And so this is where when big companies can you know, show the smaller to medium-sized companies, listen, this is going to be useful for you in the long run. This is useful information so that we are not behind in our production, but that, you know, we are producing smart in a smart way. And that's gonna, those are things we want to bring to Wisconsin, but to get that conversation going, because along with technology, always a suspicion of, you know, what am I losing here? But if we're going to move forward, yes, there's going to have to be open-minded thinking about working together.
We're talking with Saul Sander, who is the Wisconsin Internet of Things Council Project Coordinator. Jeremy Yudovich here, the group's board chair. We're looking at how everyday devices have gone from low to high tech as they get connected to the Internet. Taking your questions about Internet of Things and also your solutions, your tips on the devices in your life that have changed your life in some way. We're at 800-642-1234. Jeremy, you know, Saul is saying there that there is a tricky balance you have to strike on privacy, and certainly there are privacy policies and concerns, terms of service for users. You know, I was looking that Roomba got into some hot water a few years ago about mapping your home in their terms of service. It was completely okay to share and sell that mapping data of your home. Then we heard about our digital devices absorbing our conversations and bits and pieces. Where are we at with terms of service and privacy?
So really great point. And this is a huge topic and a hot topic for any company getting involved with a connected device. So the reality is Europe actually has more stringent laws here in regards to data privacy and usage than the US does. But because many of our firms sell their products globally, they're considering Europe's GDPR or General Data Protection Regulation as like a core compliance for all of their connected devices. So they're building GDPR into them from the get-go. But essentially, complying with GDPR today requires an organization that's going to collect any personal data to get consent. And it has to be obvious consent, not like in the past where you just sort of get consent by default of, you know, clicking through and loading an app, for example. And then with GDPR, each user actually has to maintain control of their data. So as a user, I actually get rights to turn off access to my personal data. I'm empowered to withdraw or request or even completely erase any of the data that's collected on me. So many of our products are allowing us to control this. This is a big change, and we're not all the way there yet. But this is where we see the U.S. headed as well. California has already implemented some of this. It is definitely something that, you know, any company getting involved has to be concerned with. And anybody that uses these devices, they really should do a little bit of investigation themselves and use all of the available security protocols with those devices. Sometimes it takes an extra step, like two-factor authentication, for example, because we want to reduce any risk at all of somebody cracking into that or getting access to something that we just don't feel comfortable with them having.
But does cutting off some of the data sharing limits, and the use of that data, does that limit the device and how the consumer will use it?
So it can. It can reduce some of the intelligence available to you. And you're just going to have to determine, is the risk outweighing the benefit, or is the benefit outweighing the risk?
Saul, what do you see there in terms of privacy policies and how consumers are negotiating that risk of exposing data, too much data? I mean, you were talking about using Alexa, and then we learned that, you know, Alexa was getting bits and pieces of our conversation.
Yeah. You know, I think when Jeremy and I had this conversation, I said, I think we all gave up our privacy when we went on social media and allowed them to take it. But now we're using tools for our everyday life, and they're useful. I mean, you have to make the best decisions for your family. But I agree that sometimes you sign on the dotted line without reading the fine print. And what are we giving away? But it comes down to your, you know, just exactly like Jeremy said. So is the benefit outweighing that? And you know, I think it's still new in the sense that we move so fast. And then everyone steps back and says, wait, what are you doing with the data that I put into my device? You're taking that and selling it, you know? And so, again, conversations, you know, researching, learning more is what we need to be doing. But yeah.
We're getting a handle on the smart devices all around us, maybe even implanted in us with the Wisconsin Internet of Things Council. We have Jeremy Yudovich, who is the council's board chair, Sala Sander, their project coordinator. From smart homes, cars, and cities, what do you think of this computer chip world? What smart devices are saving you time and money? How often do you have conversations with your smart speaker? Do you get frustrated when your speaker doesn't understand you? What is the next frontier? Be part of this 800-642-1234. We'll be back after a news update. Stay with us on the Ideas Network. We're diving into the Internet of Things here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Elon Musk is looking to revolutionize transportation here on Earth and in space. He demonstrated his latest version of a wireless implant last month. It's called Neuralink. In a live-streamed event, Musk showed off a pig in a pen named Gertrude.
So the beeps you're hearing are real-time signals from the Neuralink in Gertrude's head. So this Neuralink connects to neurons that are in her snout.
So when Gertrude touched something with her snout, it sent out neural spikes that were detected by the more than 1,000 electrodes in the implant. So far out, but what do you think about implantable chips and smart devices all around us? It's 800-642-1234. We have two guests from the Sheboygan-based Wisconsin Internet of Things Council, the project coordinator, Sala Sander, and Jeremy Yudovich, who is the advisory board chair. Jeremy, I want to ask you about, you know, putting microchips in people, because remember back in 2017, there was that Wisconsin company, that River Falls company, they made headlines as they put these tiny microchips into their willing employees. And for the company, it seemed very tame and innocent so that people could access vending machines, go in and out of company doors, but it made big business news. Where are we at with implanting microchips in people?
Right. So I'm actually in fairly close contact with that particular company that you referenced, and they've tried to further develop this. But the reality is there are quite a few technological barriers involved. So it in my mind, it really hasn't come very far since then. Now, of course, what you just we just heard about Elon's company, things are progressing. But to roll that out at scale anytime soon would really be a far-fetched endeavor. Not to mention, I just cannot imagine that anybody will, at least in Massey, allow this to occur. Although it is interesting, and there will be a time, I'm sure, where we'll be asking the question, do the benefits outweigh any of the perceived risks? And only time will tell, but it's going to be a while yet.
So medical ethics certainly involved in it, but what are the barriers to these tiny implantable chips in a person's finger?
So it's battery life would be a big one. How do you take something so small that you could input, you know, put into your body and actually still have a battery? Because a battery is what powers any of the radio communication. So this company in River Falls, for example, they do use, it's battery less. It uses RFID, but it's very low power, and you literally have to actually touch that sensor to the receiver. So this isn't very helpful in a lot of ways. Also, the device would have to be so small, you're really limited in how much data it could store. So if we could even imagine that we did have the ability to log information or collect information and touch it to a receiver to get insight, again, there would be so little data available to you. I'm not sure that this would really move the needle medically in too many instances. Just there's too little space available for storage, for example. So those would be two big ones.
Salah, what do you think about Elon Musk, you know, implanting a chip in Gertrude the pig?
I think it's science fiction, isn't it? It feels like it's science fiction. Like, well, no way. It's so far ahead. But, you know, as I'm listening to that and I'm listening to our conversation, I realized, too, that, you know, perhaps our listeners might not realize that, you know, not everything is what we would define under the Internet of Things. You know, because just because I have a smartwatch doesn't always mean that's an IoT product. It's kind of, but it isn't. And so, you know, because one of the three definitions that we kind of have to check off the box is to let people know, like, a device might be smart, but there are three things that need to pass for it to be called IoT, you know, and one is awareness, of course. So like the watch that we wear, you know, it's kind of, it knows what we're doing when we're moving, how many steps, blah, 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 right? But the other thing it has to do is it has to gather that data, and then it has to do something about that data. So it has to make a decision. So as we are moving along in our technology, not everything is going to be an IoT product. So unless it's only an IoT product if it passes the three A's, like the awareness, and actionable, and autonomous. So it has to take that data and make a decision on that data. So sometimes we're wearing things, it's not necessarily making a decision for us, you know, kind of thing. So I think Elon Musk is always, of course, trying to be ahead of the game, and we need people like him for that. But we are, you know, we are nowhere near getting to that where we become, AI is implanted within a human being to try and basically copy what we're doing, you know? It's not going to replace us, so.
Let's talk about the networks out there that are sustaining these products. 5G is being considered as that next big connection milestone for electronics and that use the internet and talk with each other. Salah, can you explain what 5G is and how it will affect the Internet of Things?
No, I don't. It's still way ahead. Jeremy would be better at this than me.
All right, Jeremy, go ahead.
Sure. So 5G in its simplest form is just many, many small cellular towers that are much more ambient in a cityscape. For example, today we see these large towers, you know, they're all many miles apart. Tomorrow, when 5G is really rolled out, we will see them on most light posts, for example, many, many buildings within a city, so that we can have truly ambient ambient internet connectivity that moves much faster. Allows us to move much larger data sets as well. So you're right, this will be the next frontier and will enable us to connect many, many more devices than we currently can today. So bandwidth is a little bit of a barrier. 5G will change all of that. And recently we had US Cellular and Bill Borkowitz do a talk to our membership about different cellular options, and he did do a deep dive into 5G, and they're slowly starting to roll it out. It's in some of the larger metro areas today, but this will be a large turning point in terms of how many things we can connect to the internet.
Well, as you talk about bandwidth, you know, broadband is a huge issue in our rural areas and lack of broadband access. Are some parts of Wisconsin and elsewhere being left out of the Internet of Things?
To a certain extent, yes. There are technologies. U.S. Cellular is actually one of the companies that are spearheading part of this movement. They're investing in technologies outside of simply cellular connectivity so that, you know, in an agriculture environment, for example, you might use a radio protocol called LoRa, which enables a network of many small sensors to take like moisture readings, for example, you know, all the way out miles away from the farm building itself, and can connect the information to one central gateway, which then has a cellular connection. So you don't really need broadband, actually, in that particular instance. But once it gets inside the house for smart homes, for example, yes, this absolutely can be a barrier. I mean, you know, without broadband, you can't even stream Netflix, right? And now we want to have a whole network of devices that are leveraging Wi-Fi that has a very slow, you know, baud rate. That would be very, very challenging. And we're looking to folks like Elon Musk and his satellite network to try to solve some of that problem for us.
Jeremy Yudovich is here. He's board chairperson for the Wisconsin Internet of Things Council. Sala Sander is the council's project coordinator. We're exploring the connected devices and massive amounts of data and what it means for our lives. Sala, for companies that already exist, they have an idea for how they want to fold their devices or products into the Internet of Things. Where do they start this process to make one of their lower tech products more high tech and chipped?
Well, I would say, well, for some of those, so what we're finding is often when companies have started or rolled out their technology or they're working, there isn't a lot of information out, or people don't know who they are or what they're doing. And this is where we see the council play a part. So one way is for them to just approach us, and then we are the mediator. You know, our job is to connect them, let their products be known, let other members know what is going on with this with this company and what they're doing. And so we would, so one of the things that we do at the council is we provide, like we said, the statewide programming through our currently virtual events. And so this would be an opportunity for other members to find out what's been going on, what's out there. You know, Jeremy mentioned U.S. Cellular. You know, that was something that even we didn't know. We were thinking, oh, U.S. Cellular is just a wireless, you know, phone company, and we didn't realize they were working with already rolling out their 5Gs. And so for companies that are already starting the process and they want some visibility, that's what the council is there for. You know, come to the council, we'll work out something so that that visibility goes out, so that others know, hey, I need to contact you. Let's work together. What are you doing? How can we learn from each other?
Lots of networking there. Sala Sander is project coordinator for the Wisconsin Internet of Things Council. Jeremy Yudovich is the group's board chair. Taking your questions about Internet of Things, 800-642-1234. Back in a minute on the Ideas Network. Let's get back to our conversation on the Internet of Things, IoT, here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. Billions of things around us are connected to the Internet. I just got new light switches in my home's entryway. The electrician says I can control them from an app on my phone. I haven't yet, but it's possible. Still time for your insights, 800-642-1234. We have representatives from the Wisconsin Internet of Things Council. Jeremy Yudovich is board chair. Sala Sander is project coordinator. Let's take a call now. Joe is joining us from Neenah this morning. Hi, Joe.
Hi, good morning. My question is about international design and operation standards. What council is going to ensure that things operate somewhat in the same way? For example, I rented a car this weekend, And I remember in the past be able to get into a car and run it and be fine. It took me half an hour to figure out where things were, where the lights were, how do they go on and off. We're coming up on daylight savings time. I have 17 clocks to reset, and none of them use the same format of hour, minute, or wherever you can learn them. I always take almost 2 hours to do that. So what are the standards that help us understand and use these things should you have to enter a home in an emergency to do stuff?
Joe, thanks. Jeremy, what about international design and operation standards and where we're at?
Great, great point. Great question. And seriously, still remains a pain point. You know, this is a reflection of the infancy of, you know, the IoT, if you will. The reality is we're probably still quite a few years off before there's any sort of standards. There are alliances out there that are working, you know, to try to consolidate some sort of standards, like the Bluetooth SIG, for example, or the, you know, the LoRa Alliance. They want to create standards, but so many companies have dove into this already, and they've all selected different technologies. So to try to get all of these, you know, private or publicly traded companies all on the same page is a massive undertaking. And like I said, I just don't see this happening anytime soon, unfortunately. But you're right. This is a huge pain point, and solving this problem would make adoption of IoT accelerated immensely.
When will they get on the same page about their chargers? That's my question. Good night. I mean, that has been an issue for quite some time. Haven't there been attempts to bring you know, the apples together with the others?
Well, it would be nice, wouldn't it? But sort of the same thing, you know, Apple feels like they have a competitive edge. Android feels like they have a competitive edge. And they're two of the biggest competitors. Awfully difficult to get them on the same page.
Sala, you know, how much competition is there in this environment? And, you know, when we talk about the software and all of the programming and technology that goes into these devices, I would imagine there's a lot of proprietary information.
You know, I really don't know much, but I suspect that it's still new. And so there all kind, you know, it's like I live in two worlds. I say to my family, in one world, I feel like, oh my gosh, you know, what's happening to the world? You know, there's disaster ahead. And then another world is Internet of Things, where there are endless possibilities. You know, that we have engineers who are trying to come up with solutions for daily living, for whatever we're trying to do. And so I think it's still, you know, really still fairly new. And I don't know if there's a lot of competition or if it's first to the, you know, to the gate, as they call it. You know, we had a recent our symposium that we just had, in which one of the, actually it was Bemis, you know, they are a manufacturing company that got thrown into an IT based on a customer's problem. It was a problem that this customer had, and they go, huh. So they didn't go looking for it. It was presented to them, and before they know it, they came up with this smart card, you know, to help to solve this problem and help the customer. So I think it is kind of both. It's still new, and there are companies and engineering companies that are looking to solve problems, and there are others who are looking to discover new ways. So fairly new, open to everybody is what I think. What do you think, Jeremy?
Well, I think you brought up a really great point around Bemis Manufacturing and the smart shopping cart. And, you know, there are so many engineers that are always looking for problems to solve. I don't think you have to be first into the market for sure. In fact, oftentimes companies go into the market, they think they have an idea that's going to solve massive problems. And all of that particular solution did was put them down a path that actually turned on the light bulb and created the new business model or solved problems that, you know, they couldn't have even predicted had they not had insight into those data sets that are now collected, for example, from a smart shopping cart.
If you're just joining us, we're talking with Jeremy Yudovich, who is the board chairperson for the Wisconsin Internet of Things Council. Sala Sander is project coordinator. We're exploring the connected devices and massive amounts of data, what it means for our lives. Let's take another call. Nick in Sheboygan. Hi, Nick.
Hi, how are we doing? Good morning.
Good morning.
So I have a question. Basically, so Jeremy mentioned pain points a few minutes ago, and I was curious about some of the larger pain points that have come about in the last 5 or 10 years in terms of the Internet of Things in the state of Wisconsin.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, what are roadblocks in Wisconsin, Jeremy? Did we lose Jeremy?
Sorry about that.
There we go. Okay.
So I'm not aware of too many huge roadblocks here. Broadband, as we brought up earlier, definitely is a concern. We do have a lot of rural living that does not have access to broadband internet, which certainly is a problem. But other than that, I actually feel the state is quite open. From a political standpoint, and they are working hard at solving that problem. For example, they've been very open to cellular coverage. That's a tough one. I haven't heard much in terms of a barrier to getting IoT development or products or initiatives off the ground here in Wisconsin. In fact, Wisconsin, in the form of the city of Racine, actually has one of the first officially designated smart cities. So, and they're by far the smallest city to ever be awarded like a North American smart city designation. So this to me says Wisconsin's actually very open for this sort of evolution.
Is hacking a problem, Jeremy? I mean, we were talking privacy earlier. Can these devices be hacked?
Pretty much anything could be hackable. Like, imagine a government putting all of its resources behind breaking into a device, for example. This would be really difficult to stop. Eventually, they're going to find a way. But again, this comes back to the fact that there's still billions of devices that are being deployed every year. And it's because of the benefits of the solution, and they're actually outweighing some of these risks. Nobody wants that bad press, so to speak. But again, the users are saying, hey, look, we realize that this is a potential. We are trusting that you are doing your best to try to protect us. We know you have good privacy and usage policies. So we're going to take the risk with you, and we are going to actually get involved and set this unit up in our house and our business, for example.
Sala, is failure a reality here, that some products don't lend themselves to Internet of Things?
I'm sorry, can you repeat that?
Yeah, is failure a reality here? Are there some products that may attempt but just don't lend themselves to Internet of Things?
Yes. Oh, absolutely. You know, one of the things we, Jeremy and I talked about is our children are digital natives. And so often they don't always care, how good it is. They just need to be able to interact with the device, you know. And so you never know you need to know, based on your market research, what you're going to do. But yes. That sometimes it's not, you have to take that risk of it failing. But isn't that the basis of a lot of our inventions and businesses?
Thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you for having us.
Sala Sander is project coordinator for the Wisconsin Internet of Things Council. Jeremy Yudovich is regional sales director of the council and at HYCO Solutions and board chair of the Wisconsin Internet of Things Council. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. This is The Morning Show. You're listening to the Ideas Network.